All right, glad you're with us. Yes, it is day, 27 of the government shutdown. I'm betting that almost all of you listening to this program right now have not been impacted by this. Now, the president, to his credit, he did sign a bill that will guarantee back pay for all the furloughed employees. I know it's a difficulty for some. And others, by the way, are saying, no, this is the right thing to do. This is a life and death moment. Funny how the Democrats care about separation when they could bludgeon the president with children are separated from their parents. Well, Trump fixed it. They weren't as concerned when Obama was president because the same policy was in place. Or when Bush was president, the same policy was in place. But the president that fixed it was President Trump. And when you talk about permanent separation, we'll get into this later in the program. There's, you know, you have angel moms and dads trying to meet with Nancy Pelosi. She's hiding in her office yesterday. She wouldn't even meet with them. Pretty unbelievable. Then we have the whole State of the Union game that Nancy Pelosi played. I'll get to that in a second. Before we get to that, you know, I just saw this and I was thinking, and I know it's old news, but it's important because it's follow-up news. And when you think of the moment of Brett Kavanaugh and you think of the testimony that he gave that day and, you know, literally emotionally breaking down in tears because it's his name and reputation. And remember, it was one made-up allegation after another. It got so outrageous when, you know, Avenatti gets this woman that says, well, it happened almost every weekend that they would spike the punch bowl and then the boys would line up in the halls and they'd go in and take turns gang raping young teenage girls. And it happened almost every weekend, which I didn't believe, you know, and I thought the Republicans handled Professor Ford properly. Anyway, one of Justice Brett Kavanaugh's accusers has now admitted this week that she made up the entire tale of this backseat car rape, saying it was a tactic to try and derail the judge's confirmation. Senator Grassley, chairman of the judiciary at the time, revealed the fraud in a letter to the FBI and Justice Department, asking them to prosecute Judy Monroe Layton for lying to and obstructing Congress. Mr. Grassley said that she's a left-wing activist who hijacked another Jane Doe anonymous report about a backseat rape and claimed it as her own story and calling it a vicious assault. I'm Jane Doe from Oceanside, California. Kavanaugh raped me, she wrote in an October 3rd email claiming to have been a victim. Grassley's investigators tried to reach her for a month, unsuccessful. And when they did and they spoke to her by phone, she confessed that she was not the original Jane Doe and did that as a way to grab attention. I was very angry. I sent it out, she said. I guess there's a reason. One of the big Ten Commandments is not bearing false witness. Think about it. You know, for the rest of his career, being a Supreme Court justice, it's a lifetime appointment. Justice Kavanaugh is going to be remembered for this. And just the same thing happened to Robert Bork, Clarence Thomas. You know, it's horrible what people do. All right, so Nancy Pelosi says that we can't have the State of the Union address because of security reasons, she claims. Turns out she never contacted the Secret Service. It turns out she never contacted the Department of Homeland Security. It turns out she made it up whole cloth just as a means of making a cheap political point for herself. And her claims were basically, you know, she claimed to be concerned about security. When the Secret Service spoke out about it, they said, no, we're fully prepared as we always are. Same with the Department of Homeland Security. They said pretty much the same thing. So she just made up a lie about it. Anyway, the president today, and I think this was smart on his part, Fox News is reporting that I think it's right for the president to do this as well. Nancy Pelosi apparently was about to board an airplane. Do you notice they've been gone almost the whole time? Like when the president stayed home for Christmas and the holidays, you know, all these other people are on vacation. Some people are in Hawaii. Some people, they're traveling. They're all on vacation. Meanwhile, they're worried about the government shutdown, they tell us. They're worried about the federal employees, they tell us. Anyways, he says, I remember Christmas Eve, he writes, I'm sitting here alone in the Oval Office. I'm here, ready to negotiate. President invited the Democrats yesterday to come negotiate. They didn't want to come. They keep refusing to come. Meanwhile, $1 for border security. Nancy was about to board this airplane on a trip. Anyway, she found out just minutes before the congressional delegation was set to depart. Well, she got a response from and a letter from President Trump saying that her trip has been postponed. President wrote, due to the shutdown, I am so sorry to inform you that your trip to Brussels, Egypt, Afghanistan has been postponed. We will reschedule this 7-day excursion when the shutdown is over. In light of the 800,000 great American workers not receiving pay, and the president signed that bill, they will all get their back pay. I'm sure that you would agree that postponing this public relations event is totally appropriate. I also feel during this period it would be better if you were in Washington negotiating with me and joining the strong border security movement to end the shutdown. Obviously, if you would like to make your journey by flying commercial, that would certainly be your prerogative. According to sources, the president pulled the plug on the aircraft as she was about to leave for her overseas trip. Her congressional delegation military aircraft was slated to leave right now, according to John Roberts. The source also telling Fox News that when moving to cancel the flight, the White House reasoned that the trip would keep Pelosi out of the country beyond next Tuesday night when the next government pay period would occur, meaning that we'd have no chance of paying furloughed employees. If she had gone on this trip, she would have guaranteed that 800,000 federal workers would not receive their second paycheck because she would not have been here to negotiate any kind of deal. The president's move now, I think, was the right response. You know, and Pelosi's taken a lot of hits over the idea of saying security was the reason that she wanted to cancel the State of the Union address. Well, it could be a week later if the government's reopened. Now, for more than 24 hours, Trump didn't respond to Pelosi's request, even as fellow Republicans condemned it. Even Joe Manchin said it's stupid. But why is it? They haven't been in Washington. Look at these people that went down on that junket with lobbyists down in Puerto Rico. Got the video. They're flown down on a private jet 10 days after Congress starts. The government shut down. These guys all go away for Christmas. Nobody to be found in Washington. 10 days later, then they're down partying with lobbyists. They say they care about furloughed employees. Apparently they don't. Nancy Pelosi yesterday, there were angel moms and dads and families outside of her office. These are people that lost loved ones to illegal immigrants. Well, she wouldn't meet with them. Go ahead, play it.
The politicians who are here in D.C. are not doing the job, and so it's time that we, the people, speak up, stand up, and visit the people who are not doing our bidding and get the wall done.
What's not just disappointing, but a slap in the face and really hurtful is that we don't even get the respect we deserve. I came here legally. I did it the right way, and my son paid the highest price.
This is my brother, Pierce. He was only 22. He was killed in a head-on crash in Knoxville, Tennessee on December 29th. That illegal immigrant that has been in our country for 14 years.
Remember, Democrats were bludgeoning Trump over the child separation issue that he fixed? Well, this is child separation, permanent child separation. You never get to see your kids again. They're dead. And so many instances where the illegal immigrant not only broke the laws to come into the country, but they were in the criminal justice system. Like in the case of Officer Singh. Guy was in jail. But being a sanctuary state and San Francisco a sanctuary city, they didn't release the criminal to ICE for deportation. Then he kills a cop with a 5-month-old son. But of course, if you listen to the media, if you listen to Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats, that's a manufactured crisis. You know, we have all the opioid problems in the country. Now worse because, you know, people get addicted to those pain pills. And then the next thing you know is they can't afford to buy them on the street because they're so expensive. And they end up buying these cheap $10 bags of heroin, 90% of which comes from south of our border. I don't know what, nobody knows what's in those bags of heroin. And we're losing, you know, 100,000 people a year. More than car crashes. And nobody does a thing. And then on top of that, you can add fentanyl that is being put in these bags, and people are dropping more than they've ever dropped before. They're dropping dead right there. Even if they have Narcan, which is a opioid reversal drug that emergency medics carry with them, which is a great invention, but doesn't stop the addiction. You know, talk to anybody. You get addicted to opioids, it's likely over. You're not going to recover. I hate to say that. Now, I'm sure there are people listening to me saying that they know somebody or they themselves were able to recover. We had Mike Lindell. I mean, who would have ever thought Mike Lindell was on crack for 10 years? But he's 10 years now, clean and sober, and he spends a good portion of his money and time helping addicts get off drugs. It's a horrible, horrible, horrible existence. And if we could stop the 90% of heroin from coming in, well, then we could hopefully stop some of the addiction problems that start as pills and work its way to heroin because it's so cheap. And you don't know who's making this crap or who's selling you this crap. Unbelievable. We sent one of our reporters last night to Nancy Pelosi's district. And you can't believe San Francisco, one of America's beautiful cities. There's so many homeless people. There's so many people that are drug addicts. It's like every corner that our camera people went, there were syringes, a lot of feces on the street. Now, Nancy Pelosi's rich. She's extraordinarily wealthy, her and her husband. Why don't they invest money in their own town and city and build a homeless shelter with maybe some type of rehab facility for people there, or maybe just a place where they can feed the homeless people, wash their clothes, and give them a chance to go to the bathroom and a decent toilet instead of having to do it on the street. It's pretty unbelievable. All right, we're going to get to all of this. We have the big breaking deep state news that we broke last night. Everybody knew that the Steele dossier was a Clinton bought and paid for unverified piece of garbage. They knew in August because Bruce Orr, now that the testimony was released late yesterday in John Solomon's column, Bruce Orr told everybody, don't trust this. It's a political document. That means everybody that signed those FISA applications consciously and purposefully committed a fraud on the court. That would be Comey, Yates, Rod Rosenstein, all of them. Oh, and by the way, Robert Mueller's office knew too, because Andrew Weissman was briefed as well. Unbelievable. Smoking is not about politics. It's about people. There are 34 million Americans that smoke. But for me, Juul was a game changer because you switch to Juul. It's simple. It's satisfying. And no more smell. I watch people all the time. They run outside in the freezing cold. They can be grabbing their cigarette. Well, with Juul, you'll take a quick puff and you're good. That's it. Now, Juul is designed with smokers in mind. From its form to technology, it's easy to use. No buttons, no switches. And the goal of Juul is to impact the lives of adult smokers by providing a satisfying alternative. Switch to Juul. You'll wish you had done it a long time ago. To discover the smoking alternative that is nothing like any e-cig vape you have ever tried, go to this website, juul.com/switchamerica. That's juul.com/switchamerica. Warning, this product contains nicotine, and nicotine is an addictive chemical. juul.com/switchamerica. You know, not only was it the right thing to do, the fact that Trump did it speaks volumes about his commitment. I mean, think about this. So we got another pay period. The Democrats say they're so concerned about furloughed employees coming up, while Nancy Pelosi is going to be on a 7-day junket. And the president said, no, well, because of the government shutdown, I'm sorry that your trip to Brussels, Egypt, Afghanistan is going to be postponed. But you're free to go commercial if you like. I mean, you know, in light of the 800,000 furloughed great Americans not receiving pay, I'm sure you would agree that postponing a public relations event is totally appropriate. And I feel that during this period, it would be better if you were in Washington negotiating. They haven't been in Washington. They haven't been there during Christmas. They've been out vacationing 10 days into their job. Who gets a vacation 10 days into their job that they get to go down to Puerto Rico, throwing suntan lotion all over themselves, claiming that they're working so hard? A junket paid for by lobbyists. Lobbyists, special interests. You know what that tells the average American? You want to get to your congressman, your senator? Well, take them on a junket. Take them to a tropical paradise. You know, get them, put some suntan lotion on them. Buy them some really cool food. Send a private plane with champagne and caviar. I mean, what is wrong with these people? Who goes on junkets like this 10 days into the new Congress? You know, what's Nancy Pelosi? She's going to leave, and during this period is going to be another pay period of the workers she claims she cares so much about. But yet she can't show up at the White House. They've rejected every invitation that the president has given them, one after another. They were invited again yesterday. He's inviting them now, inviting them morning, noon, and night. Come on by and negotiate. Now you might say, well, the president should open the government first. Then he has no leverage. That means the heroin continues. The human trafficking, drug trafficking continues. That means that amongst the 98% of people that are probably really good people that want to live here for all the right reasons is the 2% that commit homicides, assaults, sexual assaults. You know, when do we protect the American people first? Nancy didn't have time to meet with the angel moms and dads yesterday. All right, we'll get to the other news when we get back as we continue. Sean Hannity Show, 800-941-SEAN, our number. All right, as we roll along, 25 now till the top of the hour, 800-941-SEAN. We'll get back to this letter and the president denying the request of Nancy Pelosi. Well, she was going to be gone for the second pay period of the furloughed workers. Now, if you go back yesterday, I mean, Democrats literally boycotted the White House border security meeting again. They're on junkets. They're on Christmas vacations. This is the whole time. The 27th day, they're on vacation. They're on junkets. And she's taking another junket on our dime, by the way, when she gets on an aircraft like that. Hang on 1 second. We'll call in break. It's important. Family's, you know, important. I got to. My family forgets. My son last night called me on my TV show. I'm like, it's TV show time. I'm like, what were you thinking? He goes, oh, I forgot. I wasn't watching. I'm like.
How many years has it been?
I mean, it's hilarious. It's actually hilarious in every way. Anyway, I just think this letter was absolutely brilliant. But, you know, if they really cared about the people that they say they care so much about, you know, I got to tell you something. They would be there at least trying to negotiate something. It's their way now or the highway. And the president, for him, this is a life and death issue. You know, I can't believe Nancy Pelosi wouldn't meet with angel families yesterday. I can't believe she just wouldn't come out of her office. It's unbelievable. You know, Democrats, another boycott. You know, they were rejected another presidential invitation to lunch at the White House yesterday to discuss border security. Now, at some point here, this radicalism on their part is going to come back to bite them. The president's standing on a principle. 90% of the heroin in this country comes across our southern border. Americans rightly want that stopped. And by the way, some of it also comes over the border, you know, through ports of entry and other ways, different ports. We got to stop it wherever it's coming in. But at least that's a big part of it. You know, when I went down there last Thursday, I was literally doing the interview with the president in front of drugs that they had just confiscated the day before. They confiscate them every day. I mean, there's so warehouses full of drugs. I've been in them. The stench is like nothing you've ever smelt in your entire life. And look at this story on the Daily Caller today. Headline, child sex offender nabbed crossing the border with migrant caravan families. Well, that's the 2% of people that I'm talking about. By the way, we put it up on Hannity.com as well. It's an important article. You know, you meet if I guess if it's not your family member that's killed, your son or daughter, or your son and daughter not an assault victim or sexual assault victim, or your son, or maybe you're not directly impacted by opioid abuse, which is rampant. I don't think there's anyone listening to this program that doesn't know somebody somewhere that's addicted to opioids, that's a heroin addict or a pill addict. They're everywhere. I mean, addiction is taking over this country. Now, it's for the families, you lose, that's permanent separation. All right, let me move on. So last night on Hannity, we broke a story. John Solomon broke the story. So I was texting. I had to do that. It's important. Anyway, I apologize. Anyway, so we went over the story yesterday, bombshell about the deep state. Now, we've been breaking story after story after story on the deep state. And now we find out something that we never knew before. John Solomon broke the story last night. Damning new information that details how James Comey, Andrew McCabe, others at the FBI and the DOJ, literally, they all knew about the dossier long before they used it as the bulk of information in the FISA warrant. They all knew about it. And according to a report in the summer of 2016, remember, the bulk of information, the first FISA warrant was October 2016. But they knew in the summer, in August of 2016, we have the fourth highest ranking member of the DOJ. His name's Bruce Orr. Remember, he's been demoted twice himself. His wife, Nellie Orr, worked for Fusion GPS, so he knew a lot about this. Anyway, Bruce Orr briefed these members at the top levels of the FBI and the Justice Department about the Steele dossier. And he issued a warning at the time that the so-called intelligence in the dossier was actually opposition party research bought and paid for by Hillary Clinton's campaign, although he didn't know at the time, also the DNC that she was controlling, and could therefore be tainted with bias. He told them in August, Hillary Clinton bought and paid for all of it. Now, remember, Bruce Orr knew about the connection in part because of his wife. He was the connection to Christopher Steele, and on behalf of the Clinton campaign to put the dossier together, Nellie Orr worked with him. So if that's not everything you need to know about these people at these top levels, now you also add in that they all were Trump haters from, you know, Page and Strzok and McCabe and Comey, Christopher Steele himself mentioned many, many times. So what you have is a direct warning given to the people that eventually will use the dossier for the purpose, go before a FISA court with something that they know is a politically put together, bought and paid for dossier with dubious sources, questionable sources, much of which turned out to be false. They never did any due diligence at all. They took Hillary's information and they put it in a FISA application to spy on a Trump campaign associate, Carter Page. And they had known for at least a month and a half to 2 months that this was a political document. They withhold from the FISA court judges that knowledge that Hillary bought and paid for it, that the people involved in this put together a political document. And they had such a hatred for Donald Trump in the lead up to the election, wanting him to lose 100 million to one or to nothing. But they omitted, you know, later from the FISA warrant that the FBI had obtained from a federal court against Carter Page because of their zeal to stop Donald Trump. And many of the same players, same names we now know were also involved in the exoneration of Hillary Clinton before they ever investigated Hillary Clinton. Now, what that means is that they consciously, willfully, purposefully, if you're going to use legal terms, conspired to commit fraud on a FISA court. Well, if any other American commits a fraud on a court, I don't think it's going to work out that well for you. Not only is this a fraud against a court, it's a fraud of an American citizen's constitutional rights. Now, we have now knowledge that there are two criminal investigations. The deputy FBI director, Andrew McCabe, we know he's being criminally investigated. Now we know the general counsel, both again, under Comey, he's being criminally investigated. Well, James Comey signed on to this thing. Now, remember, we know certain things. James Comey signed on to the first FISA application. He had been told about this being a political document. That means he didn't do any verification or corroboration of it. That means when he went to see Donald Trump in January, when it was President-elect Trump, when he said to the President-elect that this is out there, this is salacious but unverified, well, he said that in January of 2017 when he signed off in October of 2016 to the FISA court, he was affirming that it's true. He was affirming that it was accurate. As a matter of fact, the very standard that Rod Rosenstein said is needed in the case of a FISA application.
The way we operate in the Department of Justice, if we're going to accuse somebody of wrongdoing, we have to have admissible evidence and credible witnesses. We need to prepare to prove our case in court. And we have to affix our signature to the charging document. That's something that not everybody appreciates. There's a lot of talk about FISA applications. And many people that I see talking about it seem not to recognize what a FISA application is. A FISA application is actually a warrant, just like a search warrant. In order to get a FISA search warrant, you need an affidavit signed by a career federal law enforcement officer who swears that the information in the affidavit is true and correct to the best of his knowledge and belief. And that's the way we operate. And if it's wrong, sometimes it is, if you find out there's anything incorrect in there, that person is going to face consequences.
Okay, that person then would be everybody in the FBI, everybody that signed off on these FISA applications, everybody that had been warned perfectly what this document was. They never told the FISA judges that this was a political document. You know, they put their signature on it. That means they are declaring it accurate, verified, corroborated, and true. Now, that means they did all of this consciously. Now, here's where the story gets even worse, if you want to believe this. Among those that were briefed by Bruce Orr, turns out Andrew McCabe, top lawyer for Loretta Lynch, Andrew Weissman's name is in this as well. Who's Andrew Weissman? Andrew Weissman works for Robert Mueller. Well, remember, Strzok and Page also worked for Mueller, part of the merry band of Democratic donors and Trump haters. Amazing how Robert Mueller was able to find only Democrats that hate Trump. Even Clinton's own attorney he put on the special counsel. Anyway, Andrew Weissman, according to this report, was briefed. So that would mean that Robert Mueller's pit bull, as the New York Times describes him, he's the guy that was cited, read License to Lie by Sidney Powell. Read that book. And he was he had one time withheld exculpatory evidence in a case. He was the one leading the Enron accounting investigation. Tens of thousands of Americans lost their jobs as a result. That was overturned in the Supreme Court 9-0. The same Andrew Weissman who put four Merrill executives in jail for a year. That was overturned by the Fifth Circuit. How did this guy ever get on this great team of Robert Mueller? So that means that Andrew Weissman, Mueller's right-hand man, that he knew also that this dossier was fake and phony and fraudulent and interesting because they're doing an investigation into allegations of Russia's influence in the 2016 election. Well, he knew that there were Russian lies in this document that Hillary paid for. We know that it was disseminated by certain intelligence people before the election. He knew that it was used as the bulk of information to obtain the FISA warrant. In other words, Russian lies. That raises the question, what did Robert Mueller know about this? And if they really cared about any Russia collusion, why didn't they care about the Russian lies that Hillary paid for, the political document that was then used to get a FISA warrant to spy on an opposition party candidate campaign associate? I mean, it's unbelievable. So you have right there Robert Mueller's pit bull. The lawyer currently investigating the Trump campaign knew that the dossier was Clinton's opposition research, bought and paid for Russian lies. And now they've spent the better part of, what, 2 years investigating Russia's influence in an election? Well, there's evidence that one party, Clinton, paid for Russian influence in the election. Why are they not investigating that? Now, maybe there's going to be hope with William Barr, the new attorney general. Maybe, you know, he'll get involved in this at some point. You know, it was interesting. Our own Catherine Herridge reported that the FBI and Department of Justice, they won't even comment on yesterday's John Solomon bombshell. That senior Justice Department officials provided evidence that they knew to be false to Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller's investigators, who then used it as the basis for the entire Russiagate investigation. Think about that. And on top of it, remember, we got the exchanges between Christopher Steele, the guy that put the Russian lies together, the dossier together. Well, his conduit was Bruce Orr also. And we know that Christopher Steele was desperate to work through Bruce Orr to get information to Robert Mueller. Did it ever happen? I don't know, but did you get it over to the special counsel? He was desperate. This was after, of course, he was fired for lying and leaking, meaning Christopher Steele. There's so much behind this. It just stinks to high heaven, the whole thing. And more importantly, the laws that are broken here.
Both Mark from Portland, a retired Coast Guard person, and George, also a U.S. Army vet, want to know under oath what you discussed on the plane with President Clinton.
Well, what I can tell you is exactly what we discussed was, as I've indicated earlier, when the president indicated he wanted to say hello, I said he could say hello. He came on board, spoke to myself, my husband. There were two flight crew members on the plane. He spoke with them briefly. The former president then spoke at length about his grandchildren.
So y'all didn't speak at all about any pending investigations or Mrs. Clinton's problems with the email or the Clinton Foundation or anything like that. None of that was discussed.
If I could continue with what was discussed.
I'm just asking if you'd discuss something that might be relevant.
We did not discuss anything about a case or matter before the Department of Justice. We did not discuss Mrs. Clinton in any way. He spoke about his grandchildren at length.
Okay.
The way we operate in the Department of Justice, if we're going to accuse somebody of wrongdoing, we have to have admissible evidence and credible witnesses. We need to prepare to prove our case in court. And we have to affix our signature to the charging document. That's something that not everybody appreciates. There's a lot of talk about FISA applications. And many people that I see talking about it seem not to recognize what a FISA application is. A FISA application is actually a warrant, just like a search warrant. In order to get a FISA search warrant, you need an affidavit signed by a career federal law enforcement officer who swears that the information in the affidavit is true and correct to the best of his knowledge and belief. And that's the way we operate. And if it's wrong, sometimes it is, if you find out there's anything incorrect in there, that person is going to face consequences.
When you bring up an integrity issue, and it's interesting, you and the gentleman from Texas raised this in a way that almost, you know, approaches it is insulting.
The gentleman may answer that question.
What I'm going to respond to is what I'm saying. I am here under oath. I am not lying. I have never lied under oath, and I never will. And so the insinuation, not even the insinuation, the direct comment that you somehow say you have an integrity issue is insulting. I take offense. It is incorrect. Nothing I have
said
here today.
I never mentioned your personal life. I just simply said the amount of time that you were spending on the taxpayer's dollar, wasting it when you were supposed to be doing your job, texting back and forth to the court, is a problem.
And the gentleman has already answered that question.
All right, it has been a blockbuster week as relates to revelations now coming out about the deep state. And if you thought this was the biggest abuse of power corruption scandal in the history, well, it's all gotten worse. Let's put it the center of this entire network, if you will, of operators that abuse power. Well, that has to be James Comey, as now his general counsel is under criminal investigation. His deputy, the deputy FBI director under him, he's under a criminal investigation. And then the revelations that we had this week. After Comey got fired, they had a big discussion. Well, maybe he made that decision because Putin asked him to, with no evidence whatsoever. Nothing. A conspiracy theory literally born out of whole cloth. Well, now this bombshell development that we broke last night on Hannity on the Fox News Channel, thanks to John Solomon in The Hill, that is damning new information about how James Comey, Andrew McCabe, others at the FBI and the DOJ willfully, knowingly committed FISA court fraud in the lead up to the 2016 election. We've talked a lot about the Hillary Clinton bought and paid for dossier with Russian lies in it a lot. But according to this report, we now know because of the testimony that was just released yesterday of Bruce Orr, the fourth highest ranking member of the DOJ, that he, in fact, briefed members, these very people in the FBI and other Justice Department officials about the Steele dossier. And he issued the warning that the so-called intelligence in the dossier was actually political op research bought and paid for by Hillary Clinton and her campaign. And by the way, then he went on to say, which means it could all therefore be tainted with bias, because they also knew, Bruce Orr knew about the Clinton connection, in part because his wife, Nellie, worked at Fusion GPS. And he also pointed out to them that, yeah, Christopher Steele has a personal animus, as did all of these people we're talking about, towards Donald Trump. So we now know that Bruce Orr warned everybody that the dossier was what it is, a bought and paid for, unverified, uncorroborated document. Now, in spite of all of that knowledge beforehand, as McCabe said, there's no dossier, there's no FISA warrant. They used the unverified, uncorroborated political document of Hillary. They failed to disclose any of this to the FISA court judges in their applications. They presented it, as Rod Rosenstein said, as being full and truthful to the best of their ability. That never happened. And that means they committed a fraud on a FISA court. That's fraud on an American citizen's constitutional rights. And this all happened under James Comey's FBI leadership. And that's why so many top officials surrounding Comey have been fired, demoted, forced to resign, and now are under criminal investigation. And by the time this is all said and done, I think they're all going to be under criminal investigation. Anyway, Greg Jarrett, author of The Russia Hoax, is with us. John Solomon, who broke this story yesterday. So Bruce Orr warned everybody involved in this that the FISA document, that the FISA application, that the dossier that was the bulk of information in the application was phony and it was a political document and they should be wary of it. John Solomon, they all knew ahead of time. They were all warned ahead of time. And they used it anyway, and they still never made any attempt to verify or corroborate, because if they had, they would have discovered what we now know is a lot of it was lies.
Yeah, listen, we know for sure from the testimony of Bill Priestap, who was Peter Strzok's boss and the chief of counterintelligence, they had only begun working on trying to verify parts of the dossier by the time they had already submitted to FISA. That means, prima facie, there's not any doubt that the dossier wasn't fully verified, not even partially verified, when it was used as evidence. We now know they had a reason to doubt its authenticity, to doubt its accuracy, not its authenticity, but its accuracy, because Bruce Orr came in and said, listen, this is a Hillary Clinton product. He's talking to Russians. It's raw intelligence. You need to be aware of that. And there is going to be bias, because the man who's writing it, Christopher Steele, told me he would do anything to stop Donald Trump from becoming president. When all that's on the table, that triggers a responsibility for the FBI and the Justice Department to be honest with the FISA court, and we don't have any evidence that they disclosed the sort of information they should have to the FISA court. That's an abuse. It could be a chargeable offense. It could be a contempt citation before the FISA court, but there are some real serious issues here that Bruce Orr's testimony really crystallized.
And that's the whole thing, Greg Jarrett. I mean, it's everything that you said and everything you warned and everything we talked about now for over 18 months, but now we know it was even more sinister than we thought, because they had a full-on warning about that dossier, and they purposely withheld this pertinent information from the FISA court judges about where the document had originated from, how it came into being, and they never verified it. They presented it as if it was gospel truth, and they knew and were warned otherwise.
They concealed vital evidence, and they deceived the judges. Here is the FBI's regulation in relevant part. Quote, the accuracy of information contained within FISA applications is of the utmost importance. Only documented and verified information may be used. So they not only violated their own regulations, but there are six felony statutes that they may have violated. Abuse of power, perjury, false and misleading statements, obstruction of justice, major fraud, conspiracy to defraud. It seems to me that the first thing that William Barr, once confirmed as Attorney General, must do is undertake a legitimate and serious and in-depth investigation into the conduct of all of these individuals, Peter Strzok, Lisa Page, James Comey, Bruce Ohr, Bill Priestap, James Baker, all of the people who were involved not only in using a fabricated, unverified dossier to launch the Trump-Russia investigation, but to lie to a court to spy on the Trump campaign.
Well, I mean, at that point now, what does that mean legally? Go over the legal ramifications for everybody that was warned. It was a political document. Everybody that was warned that Steele had his own prejudice against Trump, everybody that was warned that it was a political document and may not even be true, and they ended up taking that information and still presenting it as gospel truth to the FISA court, what crimes could they be found guilty of, and who are the people that should be subject to an investigation now?
Here are the people who signed off on the four successive warrant applications. James Comey, Sally Yates, Dana Buente, Rod Rosenstein, and Andrew McCabe. We also have learned, and I was able to confirm the testimony yesterday of James Baker. It took place in October. He said that he was the expert on FISA applications and that he was very involved in this application and the drafting of the FISA warrant to wiretap Trump campaign associate Carter Page. So as I mentioned, there are six felony crimes that are applicable. Deprivation of rights under color of law, perjury because they swore that it was true and accurate, false and misleading statements, obstruction of justice. I mean, you're using a court improperly. That's obstruction. Major fraud, it's a crime to perpetrate any scheme or artifice with the intent to defraud the U.S., and conspiracy to do that, to defraud the U.S.
So that means all these people, who is going to investigate this? The new attorney general? Will the new attorney general need to appoint a special counsel? Where do we go legally on this? Because I can't imagine with this bombshell and with this prior knowledge of this dossier, them being used four separate times to obtain a warrant on an American citizen, but more importantly, not only obtain the warrant under really, really suspicious circumstances and an outright lies given to a court, how do we get to the bottom of it? And at this point, what's the proper channel?
You know, you've got two options. The Attorney General, William Barr, if he's confirmed in several weeks, he could hire, and he needs to handpick, trustworthy, neutral, fair, unbiased prosecutors. That is the best recommendation I would make. His alternative is a special counsel, but I think he's better off using trustworthy prosecutors under his guidance.
What did you want to say, John?
Yeah, well, listen, there is an ongoing investigation right now by the Inspector General of whether the FISA application was flawed and whether any illegal actions were taken. The Inspector General, Michael Horowitz of the Justice Department, is looking at that issue. His findings will be reported to the Attorney General, assumably Bill Barr, when he takes over. And that could trigger action right there, as we saw after Andy McCabe was singled out in an IG report. He was fired, right? And now he's been referred for prosecution. I think the likely scenario is the first and next investigative finding about the FISA and its potential abuses is going to come from the IG. It's going to be made referred to the Attorney General, and the Attorney General can make several options, I think.
So that means James
is the right one.
Think of James Comey's role in this, though. He signed the first FISA warrant in October. He was one of the people warned about this by Bruce Ohr. Then in January, after the first October FISA application, in January, he's telling Trump it's unverified and salacious, the very opposite of what he's telling the court.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, James Comey is a walking contradiction on this FISA warrant, particularly because he was telling everybody he's testifying it was unverified, and yet he's signing it as a piece of evidence that should be considered verified and substantiated FISA. He has prima facie proof that one of those two statements aren't true.
All right, stay right there. We're going to continue more with John Solomon, Greg Jarrett on the other side, 800-941-SEAN. You want to be a part of the program. As we continue with Greg Jarrett and John Solomon, this big bombshell that, in fact, Bruce Ohr had warned everybody in August of 2016 about the Steele dossier and how it was politically tainted, paid for by Hillary Clinton, and how it should be met with skepticism by anybody that's looking at it. And yet all the people that were warned about it still never verified it, never corroborated it, and presented it to a FISA court as gospel truth. And I guess at this point now, all of these people, your advice legally, Greg, would be you better have a good lawyer.
Absolutely. The other aspect of this, though, Sean, is that when Bruce Ohr met on July 30th, 2016 with Christopher Steele, and he heard from Steele that, you know, he's desperate and willing to do anything to stop Trump. And Ohr then meets with Andrew McCabe, Lisa Page, Peter Strzok, FBI agent Joe Pienka. But he also meets with three people at the Department of Justice who are now prosecutors for Robert Mueller.
Yeah, Andrew Weissman was briefed on this.
Andrew Weissman, Brute Schwartz, and Zineb Ahmad all are top prosecutors for Mueller in the special counsel probe. And they also knew and were involved in this dirty, unverified dossier that, you know, was used to launch the collusion investigation and to lie to the FISA court.
Right. I'm going to have to let this go. We'll have both on Hannity tonight getting into more specificity and detail on this, especially the angle that goes right into the office of Robert Mueller. We'll get to that tonight, 9 Eastern, Hannity on Fox. John Solomon, great work. Thank you. Greg Jarrett,
Thank you.
The big scam of the whole address was that there's a crisis. There's not a crisis.
911, what is the address?
Murray Hill, West Broad Street. Somebody's ODing in a red car.
What is he overdosing on?
I think heroin.
My neighbor and her sister both overdosed on heroin.
The victim appeared to have been executed and left in the street. We were able to identify a group of MS-13 gang members who we believe are responsible.
The suspect in a series of brutal crimes is a gang member and illegal immigrant who's been deported 4 times. Tommy Vladim Alvarado Ventura is accused of stabbing 2 women and sexually assaulting a 2-year-old girl.
We saw from Trump today the typical lying, the nonsense, the spinning of crises out of whole cloth.
MS-13 gang members were rounded up this morning, charged in 3 murders. 16-year-old Kayla Cuevas and her 15-year-old best friend Nisa Mickens brutally beaten to death.
Miguel Alvarez Flores and Diego Hernandez Rivera both face aggravated kidnapping and murder charges for allegedly killing a teenage girl during a satanic ritual last month in Texas.
America's overdose crisis is worse than ever before because of the synthetic opioid fentanyl. It is deadlier than heroin.
Overdose deaths have almost doubled from this time last year.
The synthetic opioid fentanyl is causing carnage like America has never seen.
Overdoses are now the leading cause of death for Americans under the age of 50.
Start out with this idea of crisis. The president used that word several times in the speech.
Just because you say it's a crisis, George, doesn't necessarily make it one.
Suffolk County police announcing the arrest of 17 gang members after a series of violent incidents, including the massacre of 4 young men.
If heroin's the epidemic, fentanyl's the plague, and the plague is here.
The process, by the way, feels like a colossal waste of time, so he can deliver on a chant he began 3 years ago at some of his rallies. It's all about nothing.
The politicians who are here in D.C. are not doing the job, and so it's time that we, the people, speak up, stand up, and visit the people who are not doing our bidding and get the wall done.
What's not just disappointing, but a slap in the face and really hurtful is that we don't even get the respect we deserve. I came here legally. I did it the right way, and my son paid the highest price.
This is my brother, Pierce. He was only 22. He was killed in a head-on crash in Knoxville, Tennessee on December 29th. An illegal immigrant that has been in our country for 14 years.
So there's the media telling you there's no crisis. It's a manufactured crisis. It's a phony crisis. It's not a real crisis. Tell that to the angel moms and dads and those that were victims and the families of victims of homicide and sexual assault. We get 90% of our heroin from the southern border. Oh, no, it's just this is a manufactured crisis. Anyway, some of the angel moms and dads actually took some time and tried to meet with both Pelosi and Schumer, and it didn't work out particularly well. Karen Vaughn, Gold Star mom, new vice president of Moms for America and the Moms March USA. Amy Kramer is a chairwoman of Women for Trump. So they ended up in D.C. this week with these angel families. They wanted to shed light on real people, real lives, real families really destroyed. And they went to meet the Democrats that seem to care about separation so much, but apparently not about permanent separation. Anyway, and when they went to see Schumer and Pelosi, the champions of open borders, well, they wouldn't talk to them. Anyway, welcome both of you back to the program and appreciate you being with us. Karen, what happened?
Thanks so much, Sean. It was kind of an unbelievable thing. My goodness, when we visited Nancy's office, she literally hid behind a wall using her young staffers as an additional human shield. It was the blatant hypocrisy of this woman is astounding. A wall around her home is saying walls don't work and then will not meet with families who have been absolutely affected and lost loved ones to the fact that we do not have border security, an absolute slap in the face. And I will tell you that people speculated about whether or not she was there, and we almost left because we thought we had heard that she was in Puerto Rico on vacation. And just before we were about to leave the hall outside of her office, a woman walked up who had an appointment with Speaker Pelosi, and that's the only reason we knew that she was actually hiding behind her human shields and her wall.
It's just, you know, why can't she come out and say, I want to hear what you have to say?
Right. Just two words. Just to have enough respect. We had a family members of 9/11 there. We had, you know, me, I'm a Gold Star mom. My son died in war in Afghanistan. And then all of those angel families out there, one who lost their son and brother as recently as December 29th, Sean. It hasn't even been a month. And we're just begging to speak to any staffer. If we can't speak to the speaker, we understand that. You know, but just send a staffer out so we can at least address it or share our concerns in a personal fashion. Nobody, the poor girl at the desk actually said, I can't get anybody to respond to me to come out here.
And Amy, that's your experience as well?
Absolutely, Sean. I mean, we brought these angel families in to hold a press conference, to stand with the president, a big coalition of groups, to let him know that we support him, we have his back, but most importantly, so that these angel families can have their voices heard. What was amazing to me, Sean, I mean, just have the respect, like Karen said, to come out and listen to these families. They're hurting, they're in pain. We had the Corcorans there from Tennessee who just lost their son 3 weeks ago, Pierce, by an illegal immigrant in a car crash who had been in this country 14 years. And these people have the courage and the bravery to come and fight on this because it's personal to them. But, Sean, not only would Nancy Pelosi not come out, one of the things that struck me, and this did not make the news, but one of our Gold Star one of our angel family groups had been to Kamala Harris's office and wanted to speak with the senator, and they were told that if they did not leave, the Capitol Hill police were going to be called. Do you know that outside of Kamala Harris's office, there is a sign in Spanish that says, Dreamers, you are welcome here. So she's telling our angel families, her staff is telling our angel families that if they don't leave the office, that the Capitol Hill police is going to be called. But the sign outside in Spanish says, Dreamers are welcome here. It is absurd to me. I mean, who do these people work for?
Well, they didn't seem to have a problem letting people get in the faces of, you know, Jeff Snowflake and others during the whole debacle that was the Kavanaugh hearing.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, the hypocrisy up there. But Sean, this is not really about the border wall. The stuff that's coming from the Democrats, they are so blinded by their hate of this president. The hate seeps from their veins, and they are blinded by 2020. They want this man to be a one-term president. They would remove him from office if they could right now, and they can't. So they cannot let him have another win because they want him to be a one-term president. But, you know, yesterday, what I don't think it did make the news. We've been so busy here on the Hill, but the vice president did meet with these angel families yesterday and did hear from them. Yes, there are a number of them that they lost their children in violent crimes and in car accidents and opioid abuse. It's not just the people coming across the border and shooting down cops or dying in car accidents, but it's also the human trafficking and the opioids that are coming across that border. And every state is a border state. Every single state in this country is a border state. And people need to wake up and pay attention and know that this affects them too.
Pretty unbelievable that where their priorities are. It's like they know the truth because they supported all of this back just a couple of years ago. And Karen, yep. That's the whole hypocrisy in all of this. And they seem to care about they were bludgeoning the president when there was the issue of child separation, which had taken place in the Obama and Bush years. And they didn't seem to care then. They wanted to build the wall and a barrier. They were willing to fund it then. And so to me, it's all just politics as usual. And just like the stunt of Nancy Pelosi yesterday, well, we're not going to have the State of the Union address. We don't think we can have the proper security, but she never consulted with the Secret Service, nor did she consult with the Department of Homeland Security. And when they said they could easily have the State of the Union, she didn't want to hear that. I don't care what they have to say. That was her statement.
What an affront to the Capitol Police, the Secret Service, and Homeland Security, and what hypocrisy for Speaker Pelosi to say that, you know, to have a government shutdown over her refusal to provide for adequate border security, then she's suddenly concerned over her own security and that of her colleagues because of that shutdown that she has created. The hypocrisy is ludicrous, and, you know, we're just fighting, Sean. We're right with you in this battle. This is such a slap in the face, and attempting to score political points by denigrating those currently serving to protect her and her colleagues is absolutely shameful. And, you know, she is suggesting breaking with more than a century-long precedent of the President of the United States being able to deliver an in-person State of the Union speech to a joint session of Congress. So, you know, my question is that an attempt at censorship? Should we be looking at it through that lens?
I think it is rank hypocrisy. The people
right.
that claim that they have the most compassion, the people that were screaming the loudest over, quote, child separation, which the mm-hmm. president fixed. Obama didn't fix it.
Right.
Bush didn't fix it. Trump fixed it. And then when you talk about permanent separation and you meet the parents that lost their kids or, you know, and then you look at the opioid crisis that everybody says we want to fix. And this is probably a big part of it when 90% of heroin crosses that border.
Sean, what we want to know is when is she going to love America more than she hates our president? I'm sorry, Amy. Go right ahead.
No, that's okay. Karen knows I am with somebody right now, Susan Stevens from North Carolina, whose daughter on January 22nd next week, and I'll cry even talking about it, it will have been 1 year that her daughter, 22 years old, was found dead on the bathroom floor, naked, with drugs and needles all around her. And she went in and kissed her and promised her she would not die in vain. She died of an opioid overdose. And this is the kind of thing, we have a real problem, as you know, with opioid abuse in this country. And people don't want to talk about it. There's a stigma that's attached to it. We feel like as parents that we're failing because our kids are on drugs or whatever. It is something that is touching lives all around us. And we have to talk about it. And this border issue, they are directly linked. They are directly linked. And the human trafficking is part of it, too. This is affecting so many lives. And these are real human stories. It's not manufactured, Sean.
President Trump must stop holding the American people hostage, must stop manufacturing a crisis.
This president just used the backdrop of the Oval Office to manufacture a crisis.
This is a manufactured crisis. No crisis exists, and anyone making the argument is most likely guilty of fear-mongering and willfully misleading the American people.
Locals will tell him on the border, even conservatives, is that there isn't a national security crisis.
The notion that we have a crisis there, security security crisis is absolute nonsense.
This is a manufactured crisis, and a crisis that manufactured by the Trump administration.
This artificial crisis of the president isn't going to justify his appropriating money for a wall that Congress is unwilling to give.
Is there a crisis at the border? The president said there's a humanitarian crisis at the border. Is there?
Absolutely not. We have a challenge. All our humanitarian issues are challenges for us.
I don't know where people can come up with this idea that death is a manufactured crisis. It is very real, and it's final, and it is permanent separation.
Well, it is life and death. That's what the whole story is about. That's the whole story that's ignored, and that's what's that is what is in play here.
President Trump must stop holding the American people hostage, must stop manufacturing a crisis.
This president just used the backdrop of the Oval Office to manufacture a crisis.
This is a manufactured crisis. No crisis exists, and anyone making the argument is most likely guilty of fear-mongering and willfully misleading the American people.
Locals will tell him on the border, even conservatives, is that there isn't a national security crisis.
The notion that we have a crisis there, a security crisis, is absolute nonsense.
This is a manufactured crisis, and a crisis that manufactured by the Trump administration.
This artificial crisis of the president isn't going to justify his appropriating money for a wall that Congress is unwilling to give.
Is there a crisis at the border? The president said there's a humanitarian crisis at the border. Is there?
Absolutely not. We have a challenge. All our humanitarian issues are challenges for us.
All right, as we continue with Karen Vaughn and Amy Kramer, I understand the inconvenience issue of furloughed employees, and they want to get paid, and but most Americans don't even notice a government shutdown. Very few Americans actually do, which shows that, which speaks volumes, I think, in a lot of ways. But at the end of the day, I think this speaks volumes about them and who they are. And I think that's why the president's just holding the line. And if the president,
I'm glad, Sean, somebody asked me the other day, how long should the president hold the line? And I said, as long as it takes, because that's where we are in this country. You know, change is hard. Change takes a lot of grit. And we finally have a president who has the grit to wait out for change that Americans need to stay safe. Nancy's not punishing the president with her child behavior. She's punishing the people that she represents.
Well, great points.
Sean,
yeah, last word.
Can I say real quick? Nancy Pelosi's been in Washington 32 years. Chuck Schumer's been there in the House and Senate 38 years. That's a combined 70 years. Donald Trump is the change agent that was elected by 63 million Americans to secure our borders and to make our nation safe. And we do not want him to back down, and we want him to hold the line on this and know we have his back.
All right, Karen Vaughn and Amy Kramer, thank you both for being with us.